Hello and welcome to Multiform. Every week we get together and we talk about Xbox news, rumors, and the games we're playing lately. New episodes post every Monday morning. I'm spicing up the intro with a random delivery here. You can email the show, questions at multiformpodcast.com. This is episode 220, and it's a late one. I'm Tim Shelton, and this week I'm joined by my brother-in-law, Spencer Rain.
Hello.
And my friend Gus Harden.
Sorry, hello. I was having trouble finding the unmute button for a second there. Like my, the bottom part of like the new Windows program, like when you
open
it like sends that thing all the way up on the left side of the screen. Which, wow, I'm greeted to investigators have announced charges versus a Delphi murder suspect. So,
okay,
happened here.
So this isn't game related, but it's tangential because Witcher. Gus, when you sent me that Liam Hemsworth had replaced Henry Cavill as the Witcher for season 4 of the Netflix show, I honestly thought that you were like reading some Reddit conspiracy, and
no,
I immediately Googled
Henry
it.
Henry Cavill is from no. his Instagram page.
Yes, I realize from that now.
From the horse's mouth.
But it sounded literally so like made up on the internet when you said it because of the Liam Hemsworth part. Like if you just said like, oh, Henry Cavill's done as the Witcher, I'd be like, oh, okay, he's got a lot going on. He's back as Superman. Sure. But then you threw in the Liam Hemsworth and I was like, what? So, yeah. But yeah, I Googled it immediately and you're right. So I will miss Henry, but at least Liam is not a nobody.
Yeah, I am sad. That probably spells the end of The Witcher.
Henry Cavill's dream role forced out because the show writers sucked and because he wanted to be Superman, I guess. Probably both things.
They also announced today he's going to be in Guy Ritchie's next spy movie, which he was in, you know, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which I really liked.
I remember that. I liked that as well, which had Armie Hammer in it, who is a cannibal. Like, what is it?
He's like Russian.
A homosexual cannibal, like in real life.
Isn't that Armie Camel's. Yeah, he's weird.
Armie Hammer.
Oh my gosh. Remember
a
when
heck
they won.
Of a name, though, for sure.
Remember when he was talked about to be Batman way back in the day?
Remember when he was the lawyer brothers from. And he played like himself, but
the
like
social
twice
network.
In the social
The Dinkelvox.
Yeah.
The Dinkelvox twins.
And they had their own pistachios commercial.
Didn't they sue that movie?
I don't know if they got any money from it, but I do know that they were also in a pistachios commercial way back when, which was like, I'm like, why? I was like, who are these people? When it came out.
I mean, how many people probably could spot them by sight? It's got to be a very limited number. And even, and maybe slightly more that know about them from The Social Network. I owned The Social Network on Blu-ray. Why would I buy that movie? Also, Facebook and Twitter really struggling lately.
I thought it was a good movie.
Yeah, it was a good movie, but in retrospect, like especially with all that's going on Facebook now, it's like, eh. I got rid of all my Blu-rays and DVDs for the most part. So, okay, news. Let's go. Actually, wait. Let's talk about games we've been playing. Gus, I'm going to have you go first. You're not allowed to talk. Smite is now on the World of Warships path where you're not allowed to talk about it anymore.
I just put it on there because I played it. So I
know.
I don't want to speak about it. Jeez.
I was giving you a hard time. I was just kidding.
Oh, my goodness, Tim.
But we've all, with the exception of maybe Spencer, been playing Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. But Gus has the distinction of having finished the campaign and having played multiplayer. So we're probably going to be talking about this one every week for a few weeks just because it's new. And I have played it, but I haven't played as much as Gus. So, Gus, give me your summary impressions of campaign. Did you like it? And then multiplayer, just a few things. And again, we'll talk about it more in future weeks still, so we don't have to go too in depth.
So campaign, I did finish it. I don't know if I finished it by last week when we talked. I don't think we had. But it like borrowed heavily, and I mean heavily, from Sicario: Day of the Soldado, the second Sicario movie in that what is going to be a trilogy at some point whenever they finish the third movie. Basically the gist of like part of the story is that the cartel, which you find out very quickly in the campaign, this is hardly really a spoiler, is like smuggling in a known terrorist. And that's like part of like what it is, which is like a massive, massive plot point to, Sicario 2, Day of the Soldado. So, that was really cool because Sicario is one of my favorite. I mean, the OG movie Sicario is one of my favorite movies, like, ever. I mean, probably top five, maybe even top three for me ever. because I kind of count Star Wars as a whole to just be as its own thing in that. However, yes, they borrow from that very heavily, very extensively, which I like. I really do like, because I love those movies, and I really don't think they got enough credit. I mean, some people could say that I'm wrong and that they didn't. They were understated and very undersold to a lot of people. But I mean, those movies are incredible, and I love them. So I was very happy to see that parallel drawn between the movies and the new Modern Warfare campaign. So. Yes, like the campaign, love the similarities I saw between that and the movies that they very obviously borrowed from. And then multiplayer. So I played three different game types. I tried out, I think it was called Invasion, because I was stupid and I cannot figure out for the life of me how to get the quick play or how to play Team Deathmatch. And so I realized later you have to filter your quick play option.
Yeah,
to find that, which I'm just stupid. So.
Yeah, you haven't been on Twitter because you're not on Twitter anymore. People hate the UI for this game.
Yes.
And I agree. It's atrocious. Finding what you want and figuring out how to get a new game mode you want. It's not just that, though. Like, all the menus and customization, every part of finding something in the UI is terrible.
Well, and I get that they want to showcase two of their new game modes, one of which is a third-person game mode, which was in the original COD mod too, and I really enjoyed it because I thought it was cool having the over shoulder experience. It brought me back to Star Wars Battlefront and like corner peeking and using that as like an advantage to yourself to be able to know where people are at more easily. And then they have like the other one, which is like basically search and destroy, but you have to like do like it's like a hostage situation. So like no singular respawns, and you play through a round, you have to like,
yeah, I saw that one
too. Hostage or save it. So I understand they want to showcase those things, but like you also need to showcase Team Deathmatch as its own thing on there, because I mean, that's what people are trying to play.
I saw people are also pretty upset that the hardcore didn't launch with the game either.
Yeah. Which I mean, I've played hardcore before and I've enjoyed hardcore, but it has never been like a core game type for me that I like to play a lot of. So I wasn't particularly worried about that. And then they have a few other game types that are like ground war and like the bigger ones, which I said are like Invasion, which are almost like Battlefield type deals, which I mean, I guess are okay. But that was my cat banging on the background, if anybody heard that.
Yeah, I see your cat battling the blinds. It's going to be my entertainment for the rest of the show.
Yeah, he's going to go sit out there and look outside for the remainder of the podcast, hopefully. However, as I was saying, getting into a team deathmatch game, I didn't get to do that. So Friday morning I played, like I said, I played Invasion and I, which was like, okay, but it was too long range for me personally at that point. And then I played, the cooperative mode, which is like you and I guess one other person, which would be nice to have a friend to help me play that. And they're like scenarios, kind of like Spec Ops.
Yeah, I can play the game with you now because I was waiting for a friend to play co-op with as well.
Yeah, and so I tried that out. It was okay. It was fun. It was kind of dumb. You can't like bring your own class into it. They just like give you pre-selected weapons. As far as I know, I'm sure maybe that might change, but that's what I saw. And then Team Deathmatch, I got my swagger back for sure. I was doing well. I was sad and I did not get to call in my kill streaks at the end of the one game that I played because the game ended. I was about to call in my my Predator or my cruise missile now, as it's called. I pulled the tablet out and the game ended and I was like, dang it. So and then I also had a precision airstrike I was going to be able to use too. So I didn't get to use either of them because the game ended. We won. But it was nice. I got 16 kills. It doesn't tell you how many deaths you have anymore as a way to.
It does on the end game screen. It doesn't during the game.
Yeah. And I was like, I had like 16 kills, one assist, and I didn't look to see how many kills or deaths I had. I think it was like five or six. But it was pretty good. I mean, it was pretty good for like my first time back into like a first person shooter. And I've seen a lot of people bitching about this online about how it's no longer a run and gun Call of Duty. It is officially like a clear rooms, like slow movements, walk around, make sure that like you can hit your shots more than just like people like slide canceling around the corner of a room and you're not but helpless to do anything about it. And you just get smoked by some dude with like a shoddy or like a submachine gun spraying you down as they slide through a room at mock Jesus. So People were like majorly bitching about that. Like all the Call of Duty sweats were like mad on TikTok about it. They're like, it is officially the end of the run and gun era in Call of Duty. It's like now all of the single dads who get home and can play the game will can rejoice. And I'm just like, why are you mad about this? Like, dude, like touch grass. Dude,
yeah,
like go outside. I even saw a video. This dude said he had unlocked 5 of the gold camos already, and people in the and dude, this dude looked like he was coked out, like straight up coked out, like a coked out YouTube Twitcher streamer. Like his eyes were not like blinking whatsoever. He's like, I've unlocked 5 of the gold camos already in Call of Duty, and I'm on my way. Like, I mean, I blinked there, but he didn't blink. This dude was like a statue almost, but and just his mouth moving. And people were like, dude, the game's been out for like 24 hours. Do something else for like a little bit, please. But I mean, I guess if that's your job as like a Twitch streamer or a YouTuber, that's kind of what you have to do. I'm glad people are enjoying it that much that they can just be whoring it for the first 24 hours of the game. I mean, obviously I've done that before and then I've just lost interest in the game. But because I have so much going on in my regular life, I've been able to kind of like come back to it. And I was like kind of worried about it. And the reason why I didn't play more of it recently was because I was worried about getting into the multiplayer since I finished the campaign already. So trying to come back to the multiplayer, I was like, do I want to play it? So I would play Smite or I would play something else. I even played Red Dead Redemption 2 for a little bit this week because I just wasn't sure if I wanted to get into it. But then Friday morning came around, the launch came. I was like, all right, I spent $70 on it. I damn well better play it. So I played it. Enjoyed it enough there, and then I played it again today for a little bit, and I had fun. I enjoyed it. I really liked it, and I
look forward to it. I had a good feeling so far, too.
So that's
so I don't have too much to add,
yeah.
Except for I had a similar experience. My first game, I went 1.3 or 1.35 kill to death ratio, and I was similar kills, but I had more deaths than you. So I was like, oh, okay, that's a good start. First game back. Although, have you heard about this controversy? A lot of people don't like the highway map where it's like a really long, skinny map with a bunch of cars on an overpass.
Which is a Sicario callback because there's a point where they get out of the cars and they're just in traffic on an interstate.
I liked that map.
I think that's cool.
It played different than other Call of Duty maps. Like you had to check your cover and know your positioning in the map. Like, I thought it was a fresh take.
Yeah, I agree. And again, that's just your run and gun, like Call of Duty sweats, just complaining. Like they're all complaining because the Call of Duty is not what it used to be.
Yeah. I was also, because that map requires so much of positioning, like I was using all my equipment and learning what all the equipment does in the new game by like, just throwing it out and see what happens because it would help bounce off stuff. And I accidentally mined myself because I didn't know what one of my supers was or whatever they call it, tactical ultimates, or I don't know what it's called in Call of Duty. Anyway, I'm feeling pretty good about it so far. It hasn't gotten, the campaign I saw got mediocre reviews. I haven't played that yet. Not mediocre, just okay. You know, 7s, 8s. But
it did not blow me away. I will say it didn't blow me away. And I did have kind of high expectations cause I liked the first game so much, the first of the reboot. And then, I mean, Modern Warfare 2, 2009, their storytelling in that game was so, so good. Like it is hard. Like that is one of the best campaigns really of any game, honestly, in my opinion, like in terms of like short campaigns, like 6 to 10 hour campaigns.
See, that's what I like about Call of Duty. It, you know, a good 6 to 8 hour show, and then I pop out. It's like how I love a TV show that's 6 to 8 episodes, but it's a really solid, really dense 6 to 8 episodes.
Like Chernobyl on HBO?
Oh, gosh. I love Chernobyl. It's some like of the literally like top 5 shows all time.
The first 3 episodes of that show are probably some of the best television I think have ever been created ever. I mean,
some
like
of the only television I've rewatched
are still very good, but man, the first 3 episodes, so good.
I actually just rewatched the first episode a couple weeks ago, and it's just like, if you just wait a couple months and watch it again, it's so harrowing.
It's just like,
yeah, anyway.
Like the bass line in the back.
Yeah, it builds and builds, and plus it's, I don't know. Anyway, it's already late, and we've just gotten to Call of Duty so far. So instead of talking about everything I played this week, because I think there's some overlap with Spencer and stuff, I only want to talk about Gotham Knights. I've been tweeting about this. Gotham Knights is... the farther I get into it, the less I like, and it's hard to narrow down the stuff that there's so much not to like. The only thing that I'd say I kind of like a little bit is the story, yet is so far is fine. Like, I like the story. It's a good, you know, whatever. It's a Batman story or, you know, a Gotham story, because Batman's, you know, he's involved only to kick off this story. The movement is what frustrates me the most. Like, there's no way to get around the city except for grapple, but there's no way to pop out of a grapple into a glide or anything until you level up enough to get the glide or the glider or whatever, you know, the Red Hood soul jump. And you don't get fast travel until you meet Lucius Fox and unlock it through him, like, giving you technology to get the, like, bat jet backpack thing. So, like, when you start the game, all you have is the motorcycle, and the motorcycle sucks. So traversal is terrible. The combat's also super bland and boring. And instead of having the free flow from the Batman games where, like, you could combo and like, you know, counter and, like, block them with your hand and jump to another guy and punch him and, like, have this cool style, all you have is dodge and melt and attack. So instead of cool, like, combos, you're just basically dodging all the time, just constantly dodging and then using your abilities. The graphics aren't particularly impressive. The performance isn't super great. The UI is terrible. I hate all the menus. I hate how big the font is. The sound when you're driving the motorcycle, it speeds up as you're driving the motorcycle until it reaches peak volume at peak speed. And you could be driving this thing forever if you don't have fast travel unlocked. And it's just like a same, like, it does not sound good.
Just droning in the background the whole time.
It's just like a constant pitch for the motorcycle. It's not a real high pitch. It's kind of a medium pitch.
Just maxing the RPMs out.
The things I do like about this game is all the bat suits are cool. Like, all four characters have lots of cool suits, and you can customize them. You can change the colors. You can swap out the gauntlets, the boots, the emblem on the chest. All that stuff's super cool. Just like having the Spider-Man games, you have tons of Spider-Man costumes, and you can switch them, and there's no, like, penalty to switching between them. That stuff's cool. And it has transmog, so you can look different than what your stats are. Nailed it. This game is my worst fear. I'm going to finish it. And I'm going to talk about it on the show, and I'm going to complain about it every week. I'll tell you what I like, what I don't. But it's worse than Avengers. Avengers was a solid campaign. They got repetitive in the end, and the end game sucked. This game was repetitive and boring within 3 hours. And I'm only continuing at this point because I want to see where the story goes. Because the gameplay right now sucks. And I'm hoping that by unlocking more stuff, it's going to get at least better enough that it's going to be tolerable. But, like, I don't rate games on a 0 to 10 scale, but I like to give that as, like, a gauge of where I'm at right now. And right now I'm at a 5 out of 10 for this game. That's, like, the tone of how my experience feels.
Which,
and I'm not done with
for any regular fan of video games, is actually more like a 1 or 2, because Tim has a very bad habit of not rating games lower than what they should be rated.
I mean, I don't know.
I've never seen you give a game anything lower than, like, a 5. Maybe,
yeah,
a 4 once.
Because normally you can see from, like, trailers when a game's going to be total trash, and
right,
you
but
just
then
avoid
it. Changed a little bit, but, like, when it has such a disastrous launch as this, this has got to be, like, a 1 or 2. Sorry.
I mean, the press was giving it 4s to 7s, yeah, so, I mean, I feel like...
There's never going to be something that comes out full release that is, like, completely irredeemable, so it's, like, that's why, like, you get away with, like,
a
4 or
a
5.
A 1 is a completely broken, like, game. You're being extreme.
Hey, I'm not saying it's completely broken. That's why I said 2, maybe.
I will say some funny things. Okay, so the stealth in this game.
Spencer's texting right now, and I'm like, dude, that's not going to release like that. It's not like that doesn't function that you cannot play. Like, they're
games
not
come out that don't
like
work
that
all the time. Skyrim didn't work on PS3 for months.
Right, but then, like, you look at everything about Skyrim, it's like you understand why it doesn't work. Because, like, that game is, like, in 2011, Skyrim is a very ambitious game. The same way Oblivion is a very ambitious game for 06, 07. So you saying that a game that is like this, that's been had a pretty fairly long development cycle and still comes out and is just not good, 2 or 3.
Yeah, and the thing is,
in my opinion,
it's actually not, it's not bugs or anything that makes this a bad game. It's design decisions. The combat, they made decisions about how to craft their content. And honestly, the frame rate, Digital Foundry did a video on it on PC, and they found that no matter how high spec their PC was on the graphics card, it wasn't saturating the graphics card because the game is CPU bound. Do you know how rare it is for your CPU to be the limiting factor on a game? I have no idea what they did with their engine to make this game this way. Anyway, a couple examples of funny things. The stealth is atrocious. Like, it'll say, go do this thing undetected, and you get extra XP and extra rewards. The stealth system is so bad, and it's not designed in the way Arkham was, where there's things built into the environment to help you with stealth, like gargoyles and underground crates and, like, ways to maneuver. You might as well just, like, try and walk around and hope that you can get around behind a guy to take him out stealthily without somebody else seeing. It's pointless. Another thing is, I have this glitch where you use A, holding A, to open, like, chests or interact with anything. And frequently I'll walk up to something trying to hit A, and I'll get, like, stuck against the wall. And my character just, like, spins until I can break free of the wall. Like, it breaks from its animations. Final thing, because I know I'm crapping all over this game. I did give it a 5 out of 10. I'm not going to a 1 or a 2, because that's
it's
ridiculous.
It's got a 3 at the most, Tim.
It's playable, and the story's intriguing, and there is some fun
playable?
To be had.
That is the bare minimum, Tim. That is a 1. Playable
yeah,
is
no,
a 1.
A 1 is unplayable.
No.
A 1
no,
is
it
trash.
Isn't. No, because
there's
we
no
know.
Sub 1. There's no yes, sub 1.
Gus is reading a game he hasn't even played.
It could be
I
a
know,
0.
Right?
No, Gus can't, is this a fraud. Is me. This is me dying on the hill of...
Okay, hang on. Hang on. I gotta tell you the worst part of the game.
We cannot have a 1 to 10 scale. I went off on Spencer Ross just now. Not really went off.
Destroy your
mic. We had a civil conversation.
He's gonna eat his mic.
I had a 1... If you have a 1 to 10 scale and you refuse to use half of it, why even use 1 to 10? You might as well just use a 1 to 5 star ranking.
No, because the 1 to 5...
He doesn't like that. From that perspective.
But it's like, if you're not gonna use... If you're not going to use half the scale, why even Hold bother?
On. No, Time out. I would. Time I out. Would use the bottom half of the scale if
no,
a game came
wouldn't.
Out that was
and
that atrocious.
And which doesn't happen because games don't get released like that. Like,
that's
not
true.
Unless they're like indie games.
It's not just an atrocious. Okay, so you're saying that this game, even though it's playable, has so many designs that are bad that it should. Sorry, I hiccuped mid-sentence there. It should.
It warrants a 3. I would say Gotham Knights is a 3. And if you try to disagree with me and say it's any higher, then you're
wrong.
Well,
you haven't played it, so you just sit down, sir.
Right? But like the Tim's a very hyperbolic person, so him giving it a 5, you know it means it's a 3.
That is also true. My boss at work, we rate movies, and he's always two grades lower than me. Like if I give something a 7, he's at a 5.
I don't know. It's like I said. Okay.
Okay. Well, anyway,
so I can't give my recommendation on it. But
go watch other videos, and anyone listening to this, you'll see what the opinions.
Whatever.
I don't recommend. This is a game like, okay, Saints Row. I haven't played it, but based on the reviews and stuff, I'm like, okay, that looks like a game that would still be fun if I got it at a cheaper price. Don't buy this game. Gotham Knights is not a game worth buying. Maybe at $10, it's worth buying if you really love DC Comics. Maybe $20 if you're like a super fan of DC Comics. I'm a big fan of DC Comics, and I'm willing to play through the story and endure this because I'm interested, but I would not recommend it for anyone else. Which anyway,
so you're saying for $10 when it's a $60 game, so you're giving it 1/6 of its value, which should mean that it should be in
1/7.
The lower bottom.
Okay, okay, let's stop arguing over semantics
of
the score.
1 to 10 scale.
Anyway, final thing, you know how there's the detective vision in the Batman games? This game has AR.
Goated.
So like you scan and like use augmented reality, and it projects things into the world. But it's basically
no wonder the game can't run.
But it's basically like a scan pulse, and it sucks. But when you do detective mode, which is actually you find like a crime scene and you have to do detective work, or when you get evidence in the Belfry, which is their version of the Batcave, you don't do cool like detective mode. It zooms into what I can only describe as a mobile phone game. All the evidence is in the screen space, and all you can do is scroll around with a cursor and click on two items and connect them together to create a connection between two pieces of evidence. It's like a mobile phone match 2 game. It's like, oh, here's a blood vial and here's a sample of blood. And you connect the two of those from all the other evidence and it goes, bing, you've successfully solved whatever the heck. And it's pretty lame. It feels like a match game on a mobile phone where you're trying to solve cases as Batman. And it was made by some company you've never heard of on a $5,000 budget. That's what those detective things feel like. Saints Row feels like a game which I haven't played, again just going off the impression, so feels like a game that they could patch into being a decent game. This doesn't feel like it could be patched into being a good game because there's too many inherent design decisions that are just really, really distracting and flawed. Like, I hate the bat bike, I hate the detective mode, the combat isn't great, the stealth's bad, the traversal's bad. At that point, the only thing keeping me there is being a fan of DC and the story. So I'm not going to beat up on it anymore. I'm going to beat it. I'm going to keep playing it. I might even 100% it on achievements because I'm a masochist. But yeah. And also, I want to know what happens if anything happens with Batman at the end. I'm of such mixed opinions about this game, but I do not recommend buying it. Let other people play it that have already bought it and watch them on YouTube or listen to me rant about it on this show. With that, Spencer, I also played some Forza Horizon 5, but I see Spencer talked about that too, so I'm going to let him be the one to dish on that. And then, Spencer, have you gotten farther in A Plague Tale Requiem? Because last week we talked about it when you were not on the show.
Yeah, I'm curious. I got to chapter 4, so I've played a little bit. How far are you?
3, 2, something like that. I haven't played it since launch night because we had Gotham Knights, A Plague Tale, Modern Warfare, and one other game all in the span of a week. So I've been kind of jumping around.
Yeah, so I haven't played that in a few days, but like I said, I'm on chapter 4. So I like it so far. It's funny, I played the first game during lockdown, like right at the beginning of the pandemic, in March of 2020. So it's been obviously 2.5 years since I played that. So I don't remember exactly. I couldn't remember exactly how that game ended. Because I think Rec Room kind of picks up like pretty much right after the end of the first game, like just a few days after it, or, you know, a few weeks or something after. So the story, I'm kind of just like, yeah, okay, it's fine. Like that kind of the main story. But yeah, I mean, it's fun. It's pretty fun. It seems like there's a lot more, they've added a lot more, like there's a crossbow in this game. I think some of the kind of attachments, I guess, if you will, for the sling, you know, I think some of those were in the first game, but that whole crafting system is kind of cool. I like the puzzle solving nature of it. While also trying to figure out, well, I guess the, kind of figuring out how and where to get fire and use fire is kind of the meta puzzle of the game. But then, like, when you get in specific parts of the story beats, where you're trying to, you know, advance along to the next area, that's kind of the bread and butter of this game. I like how, and I don't know, like, so I don't know if this is part of the story that everybody gets, or if it's because I just happen to be killing more guards than maybe you have to. But I like how, like, I'm at, and this is kind of a spoiler, I don't know, but Amicia basically just has like a breakdown, and then like from killing guards, you know, and then like it kind of reminds me of like the first Tomb Raider game, where like she's just like, you know what, screw it, I'm just gonna keep killing all these guards because this is like the only way to, you know, survive essentially. And meanwhile, Lucas, who's like the other kid that's with you, not your brother, but he's like this other kid that's helping you. He's just like, whoa, what's happening? You can tell he's like uncomfortable with like the change in her character. But I kind of find that story, part of the story, really interesting. I like those kinds of stories where you see somebody just like get broken down like that, and then like kind of like have like a snap and then turn into a completely different person. Or like, I don't want to say slowly degrade, you know, into like somebody else, but that's kind of what it's like, I guess. But the reason why I'm not sure, like,
it also from a gameplay perspective, it helps with the narrative dissonance of being like the hero that is like murdering hundreds of thousands of people in like a shooter. If you build it into the story that the character is doing something out of force and feels uncomfortable with it, it kind of helps address the narrative dissonance.
Yeah. And I the reason why I wasn't sure, like, if that's the narrative or not, is just because there's like, there's different skill trees, I guess you can call them, that you can invest in. And like, it's based off of how you play the game. So there's like a one that's based more around combat, another one that's based more around stealth. And then I don't know what the third one is. I think it must just be kind of a general, kind of like a, wider ecosystem type progression. And mine were all, advancing like kind of at the same rate. So I wasn't sure exactly how that works into it, but, yeah, one thing I mentioned this to you on Saturday, Tim, was that unlike the first game, you can revisit chapters, which is kind of cool. So if you miss, either the herbarium, like the flowers for Hugo, or like, the just random, I think they're called souvenirs. I think that's what the collectibles are called in this game. I'm pretty sure you should be able to go back and get them. I haven't tried. I just was watching a YouTube video about the game, and that was something
that's nice. I'm trying more and more to allow, like, I feel almost compelled to get the collectibles in most games, but I'm trying more and more to just not care, because
that's where I'm at. Yeah, I was just gonna say that. Like, 2 years ago, I was like that. Even a year ago, I was like that. But, like, anymore, I just, like, it's too, like,
time-consuming without adding any value.
Yeah. And, I mean, with this game, I specifically went into it because the first game I played using Macca's Guides. Like, I had that up on my laptop while I was playing it to get everything. And he obviously has put videos up for this game, too. And actually, I was watching one of his videos, and he... It was like a short, like 2.5 minute video he put up. So I was just like, oh, I'll just watch this and just see what he's talking about here. And that's where he said that, like, oh, you can load up, because he was recommending checkpoints to load it in to, like, do an exploit, essentially. And so I went into this game with, like, the opposite mindset, where I was just like, I'm just going to play this game. I'm not going to have a guide up. I'm just going to play through it. And if I miss stuff, I miss stuff. So be it. Just because, yeah, like you said, I just don't have time to try to 100%, or not even necessarily 100%, but just get everything, because I don't think I would have. I can't remember. I don't think I 100%ed the first game. I think I got, like, I don't know, you know, half.
I used to always, like, I used to always try and 100% Call of Duties. I'd get all the collectibles, all the achievements, and it's time consuming. And nowadays, I'd prefer to play more games less deep, if that makes sense.
Yeah. The, I mean, but I guess just in general with this game, it's cool. If you like, if you played the first one, I mean, it's more of the same. It looks really pretty.
A lot better graphics, though.
Yeah. It looks really pretty. The voice acting is really incredible, considering, like, I can't remember. I feel like we talked about this when some, you know, the announcement for this game and around the announcement and, like, other promo materials. I think we talked about this, but I don't remember, like, if the voice actors are actually, like, younger, or if they're just, like, adults that can sound like children. I don't know, but that's all done really well. Just because, like, they play with sound a lot in this game. Like, there's lots of whispering and things like that, which is done really well. Like, it's not annoying, and it's pretty high quality. So I'm not quite hooked into it yet. I mean, I am enjoying it, but kind of the hook in the first game, I remember being just trying to figure out, like, what happened, how this happened, like, why does Hugo have, like, the abilities that he does, like, what's creating all this. And there isn't really that for this game, so I'm waiting for the kind of the hook of the story to get me. Like I said, I'm only on chapter 4. I think there's, like, 16 or 17 chapters. So
wait, the younger brother's name is Hugo, right?
Yeah.
He's played by a girl that was born in 1995.
Well, I mean, girls can probably sound like young, you know, 6-year-old boys probably better than most male actors could.
What's interesting is she didn't play him in the previous game.
Interesting.
Oh, wait, there's another actress for Hugo. Also a girl.
Interesting.
Very interesting. I'm not going to dig any deeper because I'm worried I'm going to get a spoiler or something. But also, I couldn't find a birth date for the Robin Wolf is the girl that plays Amicia. I don't know if there's more than one actress for her, because it might be different languages or it could be different ages. I don't know if they get aged up between games or anything like that as far as
actresses. No, like I said, I think it's, like, it's pretty shortly after the end of the first game. It seemed like you've been reunited with your mother, but, like, I feel like it still couldn't have been more than a few weeks at most. But it's been 2.5 years. So
yeah, I probably exactly need to check a different site, because I'm looking
IMDb
at
have it.
Well, I'm on IMDb, but that's what I'm saying is, like, there's the first listing is for Robin Wolf playing Amicia, but way farther down there's an Amicia English version that says Charlotte McBurney. So there is a website for video game voice actors that I'd have to look at, but if the English version is separate, then what's the main version? Is this game a French first game since it's set in France? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
But I mean, like, if you look at the top, Robin Wolf is listed first and Chloe Lewis is listed second for Hugo. So I think those are the stars. And then Tom Hudson is listed for Lucas. So I think those three are the three protagonists. Anyway, way down a rabbit hole on that. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, who knows? I don't know. It's cool. I mean, the voice acting, like I said, is really well done. Audio is done really well. Like you said, Tim, the graphics are a lot better. It's a really pretty looking game.
I'm glad this game didn't let us down like everything else this year.
I know. Yeah. The year that gaming forgot continues, except for with a Plague Tale. We got a couple more games in the next you know, 6 weeks. Midnight
Call of Duty seems solid too, so I'm glad that one delivered too.
Yeah, Call of Duty seems fine. I haven't played that. I don't really have any interest in getting into that anytime soon, so that can be what you guys talk about. I did play a little bit of the Skywalker Saga. I finally finished episode 2. That's like a game I pick up and play, like, you know, 30 minutes every 2 weeks type of thing, because it's just like,
that's funny. I also played it this week, and I also played episode 2.
Yeah, starting episode 3 this week, maybe I'll actually enjoy it. What else? Oh, I did play some of the 10th anniversary stuff for Forza. Not much to say there. It's cool. I like how they're honoring the past games. You don't see franchises doing that a lot.
And it's really easy to get the cover cars for the previous game if you just
don't already have them. But like at this point, I feel like most people probably have those cars, but
that are still playing.
What they should have done is they should have made Forza editions for all of them. And that's the car that you get.
That would have been cool. Probably requires more licensing though, because I'm sure they had the license. Well,
they made a Forza edition of the Viper. Yeah, like you said, the Dodge. But so
I bet they probably had to go to Dodge and license to do that though.
Yeah, maybe. Let's see. One thing that was cool I noted on Forza is when you load it up right now, the menu, like when you hit A to start, it's like kind of a montage of the old game menus. Like the first one is like the dude leaning against the guardrail.
It changes every week.
Right. So for the Viper, it was the Viper sitting there, you know, with the guy leaning against the guardrail, like from the first game. And this week it's been the Huracan. I guess now it's been reset Mercy, now to the Centenario.
Centenario, yep.
So that's cool. And it's like the intro, like the menus were in those games, which is kind of neat. I just
appreciate that it's not the Mexico song anymore, because I'm so sick of that intro.
Yeah, so that's all pretty cool. Neat there. Some cool cards that they added for like the 20 and 40 Forzathon point rewards for completing, you know, the weekly challenges. So appreciate that. Talk about a game that live service game that's pretty much that delivers pretty consistently week in and week out. And it's, you know, I feel like you're hard pressed to see that type of consistency. I mean, some weeks are better than others. Some weeks are, you know, totally forgettable, but they still do stuff every week. I'm kind of excited. The next partnership is with Donut Media. Which is a YouTube channel that makes like really kind of niche car videos. So I'm interested to see what that's going to look like. But yeah, I mean, I played also just to round it out, I played a fair amount of Mass Effect 3 on the Legendary Edition this week as well. Well, I guess the last 2 weeks since I was last on here. But yeah, so that's what I played this week.
Man, a lot of diversity this week. It's nice that we finally had some new games come out, but it like I said earlier, I'm sad about Gotham Knights, but I am going to finish it. Okay, news. A lot of first-party news. A lot of big stuff that isn't that big this week, if that makes any sense. So, for example, number one, Age of Empires, 25th anniversary stream. I would not have expected any console-related news for this. We mostly talk about console stuff on the show, and sure enough, they had console news. This blew me away. I did not see this coming. Age of Empires 2 Definitive Edition coming to Xbox January 31st, 2023. And then more than that, Age of Empires 4, the new one that just came out last year, is coming later in 2023. They also announced Age of Mythology Retold, which is basically the Definitive Edition treatment they're doing for Age of Mythology. That one currently is only planned for PC, but you have to wonder after these two games they've announced, if those do well, will they port all the other games to console? My guess is no, because Age of Empires 2 is the most beloved in the series, and Age of Empires 4 is the one that just came out that they're doing live service and still adding content to. So I think that is why they were worth the resources. Just for the highlights of the what's coming to console, they've created a new AI to help with resource management on console. So I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but hopefully it works well or can be disabled if it doesn't. A new tutorial for console to explain the game using controller input. And then they're also supporting keyboard and mouse on console. So if you want to just, you don't have a gaming PC and you just want to play it with the keyboard and mouse, you can do that with a console on a monitor or PC or whatever, or a TV. So I love this. I love that Age of Empires is coming to a new place. I was a huge fan of Age of Empires 2 when I was a kid. I still have my disc in my garage right now for Age of Empires 2 on PC the OG launch. I don't know. I probably, if I was going to play this, I would play Age of Empires 2 just because that's the nostalgia factor. But we'll see. I don't know how much time I have to fit this in with other games. But do either of you have any interest in playing Age of Empires real-time strategy on console?
I'm glad that this is at least coming out on console as a first-party game that would be on Game Pass or is on Game Pass for PC. It's nice to get more of those first-party games in the console fold. That's kind of my initial thought on that. The Age of Mythology thing is funny to me because there's only been one Age of Mythology game like 20 years ago, and they had a couple expansion packs for it in the 03-04. But it's funny that I wonder, since it's Age of Mythology retold, so it's probably a remake rather than like a whole new kind of game. I mean, obviously it's 20 years later, so it's going to be it's going to be a pretty serious remake, I would imagine.
Well, they said it's going to be the same as the definitive editions were for Age of Empires 1, 2, and 3. So it'll be like completely new graphics, 4K, but all the underpinnings of like gameplay will be the same. So yeah, I think it's only graphical improvements and maybe some like animations.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's fine. I think the idea of Age of Mythology is cooler to me than regular Age of Empires. I obviously haven't played Age of Empires 4 because I don't have a PC. I did play a ton of 3 on PC back in the day. So I'm interested. You know, I'll probably download it and check it out. When Age of Empires 4 came out, I mean, I watched some gameplay of it and it didn't blow me away. I mean, it's Age of Empires. It's hard to really, break new
ground.
There's
kind of a sameness to it, right?
Yeah.
Especially 1, 2, and 4, because they all have the similar look to them, versus 3 has that. It was the one they did like 3D models that haven't aged as well.
Yeah. And 3, I feel like, was a slightly different kind of setting, because 3 was more, 18th century, whereas I feel like all the other ones are more medieval or, old like that. Cool.
Funny enough, I owned Age of Mythology. Those were the two I owned, Age of Empires 2 and Age of Mythology. I didn't have 1. I didn't have 3. And I don't know if I still own Age of Mythology. I'd have to go dig around in my garage and see if the disc is out there. My assumption is no, because it never hooked me the way Age of Empires 2 did.
Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Okay. Number 2, Witcher 1 Remake. This came out of nowhere. CD Projekt Red tweeted it out. Remember when they had their financial call a couple weeks ago, they announced a whole bunch of games. One of them was called Codename Canis Majoris, and that is now what we know to be this game. So it's Witcher 1 Remake. It's being remade in Unreal Engine 5. The developer is Fool's Theory. They've worked on previous Witcher games, but I'm not actually sure what all their involvement was. And so the quote on their tweet said, "We want to do this right, so please be patient. It's going to be a while until we can share more details." Spencer, you look like you're doing the research for me to figure out who Fool's Theory is.
Yeah, well, I Googled, or not Googled. I was already on Wikipedia. They don't have a Wikipedia page, so let me just...
I think they were a support studio on at least one or two other Witcher games. What they called out in the interview was that people that work at that studio are fans of the franchise and know the lore and respect the franchise, so... Hopefully that means good things. I think the game needs a lot of updating. I've heard the first game was pretty rough by modern standards. I mean, it was the first game for a new studio at the time.
So according to their website, they've worked on Baldur's Gate, Divinity 2, Outriders, a game that I can't read, Gord, I don't know, and then 7, Enhanced Edition, 7, Drowned Path. I don't know what those are either. So,
any Witcher games listed on their website?
No.
Interesting. So maybe they were just referring to people that work at the studio have worked on The Witcher. Maybe
Yeah, I think they're Polish. So it could be, that people from, CD
like
Projekt
they
Red
trust
kind of
are over there
around.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean,
nothing really to talk about now. I mean, it's cool.
Yeah, they are Polish.
When it comes out, take it at face value.
I'm very excited for this because, like you said, the first Witcher game came out in 2007, so it's pretty dated at this point. I mean, Witcher 2...
And never came out on console. It was PC only.
Yeah, and Witcher 2, which is 2010, looks bad. by modern standards. So yeah, this game looks really bad, visually at least. I mean, some people have, you know, modded it over the years and it's made it look better, but no, this is a classic example of a game that deserves to be remade, because like you said, it's never been on console. So that's a whole new catalog of potential players.
And, which has never been more popular.
And it's 15 years old. Like, so it's right. It's that's those are the games that need to be remade, you know, 15-year-old games. So should be cool. I am excited for this. It sounds like we won't hear anything for quite a while, though, which is what it is.
I think when they were describing the games, this was the one that they said is a Witcher game being developed by an external studio that we knew nothing about. And we wondered, like, oh, is it going to be a mobile game? Nope, turns out it's a remake. So, yeah, it sounds cool. I'm glad it's happening. Okay, number three, Fallout 4 next gen update. So I tweeted out about this. I never thought this would happen. I thought after they remastered Skyrim twice and just ignored Fallout 4, that it would just never get any kind of update and be locked at its performance of 30 FPS on console. It does have FPS boost, but you have to limit it to 1080p if you want to enable that. So they just, again, they just tweeted it out, and it said in the blog post about it. Well, okay, that's being unfair. Fallout 25th anniversary has been being celebrated on social media and in live streams and stuff by Xbox over the last week or two, Xbox and Bethesda. So it's part of the 25th anniversary, which culminated in their last like push of information was this last week. And this announcement came as a part of that. So they didn't just tweet it out. I'm hyperbolically stating it. But anyway, here's what the quote said in the blog. Prepare for the future. A next gen update is coming to Fallout 4, coming in 2023. This is a free update, will be available for Xbox Series XS, PlayStation 5, and Windows PC systems, including performance mode features for high frame rates, quality features for 4K resolution gameplay, bug fixes, and even bonus Creation Club content. So this, remember, I just finished Fallout 4 a few months ago, and I have all the DLC to finish. Well, I'm like, well, I'll just wait for this to finish all the DLC. So I'm going to take a break from Fallout 4, and I'll go back to it in 5 months or whatever this comes out. I'm pretty excited. Sounds great.
Yeah, I don't really care.
I remember when you used to be like playing modded Fallout in your parents' basement. Well, that's the thing is, like, in law school,
Fallout, it's broken for me now. So like every time I try to play Fallout 4 on my Series X, it just crashes. Like even with zero mods installed, I cleared the cache, everything.
You broke it. You broke it.
I don't really know what happened. But I mean, I don't really care, just because like Creation Club content, like I don't. Mods are cooler. I've played this game so much. It's just, I don't know. It's cool. Like, yeah, more support. Wasn't there a trailer for the TV show this week?
No, there was one image that they did for the 25th anniversary. And then there was a video of a behind the scenes of, what's his name? Jonathan Nolan, who's a producer on the show.
Maybe that's what I saw.
They're interviewing him for like 10 seconds. And he's like, they're like, hey, we heard you're a huge fan of Fallout and you played all the games. And he's like, Fallout? Never heard of it. Are you sure? Say it again. And then Power Armor comes from off screen and hands him a new Coca-Cola, and he starts drinking it, saying, what is it again? And they're like, Fallout. And he just takes sips of the new Coca-Cola, and he's like, oh, yeah, I might know what you're talking about. Very tongue-in-cheek, and you can see in the background like kind of some of the wasteland, and obviously the Power Armor handed it. It's a creator of one of the creators of the Westworld TV show. So, and if you don't know Jonathan Nolan's
brother.
Yeah, Christopher Nolan's brother. Didn't he work on some of the Dark Knight movies? Wasn't he a producer or co-screenwriter or something?
Yeah, that sounds right. But
he's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, it is what it is. On the one hand, it's nice for people that were wanting to get into this more, play it more, but I'm more interested in things I haven't played, you know, like the older games getting remastered or new games. So.
I would love for New Vegas to get the 4K update like Fallout 3 did, because I keep wanting to play New Vegas, but it's just so fuzzy. It's like sub 720p, 30 FPS even on back compat. And I think it gets native boost to 60 FPS, but then it's still just so grainy. And I guess I could play it on PC, but I don't know. I'm still playing Fallout 4 DLC, so I don't really need to go back to New Vegas at the moment. Anyway, number four, Gus, is a good one for you. So they're doing a new version of Lego Star Wars, the Skywalker saga. So they're splitting it up into three different batches. So basically, here's how it breaks down. They're releasing a new version of the game, but the new version of the game basically comes with everything the deluxe edition of the original game came with, plus the collection pack 2. So the first one had collection pack 1. Now this is collection pack 2. I think it's called something else. It's coming out November 1st, and it's called the Galactic Edition, but you'll be able to buy the second collection pack separately. So I'll read some of the little excerpts here, but the Galactic Edition includes 6 new character packs from such shows as Andor, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Star Wars, The Clone Wars, adding 30 new playable characters to the game. So November 1st, they'll be adding The Clone Wars, Star Wars Summer Vacation, adding Captain Rex, Darth Maul, Asajj Ventress, and others. And then November 15th, they'll be adding Star Wars Rebels, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Ezra Bridger, Admiral Thrawn, Ben Kenobi, Darth Vader, Reva, the Third Sister, and a few more. And then on November 29th, they're adding Andor, the Book of Boba Fett, and that adds like Cassian Andor, Bix Carlene, Cad Bane, and some others. So I tried to find this, and until November 1st, it looks like we won't be able to see the pricing for how much it is to buy for people that already own the game. Their character packs are always extremely reasonable. So I'm expecting either $10 or $15 for all of this.
Man, an Andor character pack. Talk about something that I really just do not give a crap about.
I know.
Other than Cassian himself, I really degaff about cool, the rest of this. Well, the Book of Boba Fett, Cad Bane is fine, but that's also because Cad Bane is a strong recurring character from the Clone Wars series.
Yeah.
Which has a lot more clout than Book of Boba Fett in and of itself, and even Andor. So, plus it adds to the what seems like a fairly small bounty hunter list. Could be wrong in saying that, but
yeah. So I'm curious how much it's going to sell for. If the whole second pack is going to be $10 or $15, they're usually pretty affordable. So I think it won't be too much. And how much are they going to charge for the Galactic Edition to get everything for a game that's already been out for? Yeah. 6 to 8 months.
Oh, really?
Did it come out in like March?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I wasn't thinking about it. I thought it was April.
It's been a while.
Might have been April. But
so, yeah.
Regardless, still a decent amount of time. I'm kind of sad that we're getting the weird new edition plus character packs before we get a... I guess I shouldn't think that it's weird to get a character pack before we get DLC for like Mandalorian.
Well, we already had Mandalorian shows. Character packs,
right? But I mean, like a Mandalorian,
like standalone episodes or whatever.
Yeah.
Something tells me that's not coming. I wonder if they're going to do a Lego Mandalorian standalone game. That's what I think's coming.
Ah, boo!
That's what I think's going to happen. They're going to make
Star Wars: The Expanded Universe saga. I guess maybe. Who knows?
I mean, either that or
buy that simply for the Clone Wars alone.
I wonder what their next game is going to be, too, because, you know, typically they've kind of jumped around between different IP, but Star Wars obviously is the best seller. But, I mean, you know, Lego Batman was pretty big for them. Could they do that in this new engine?
They could easily turn this into a platform for a multiple like episodic type game. I mean, they already have the wheel that they use for you to navigate which episode you want to go to.
You're right.
I can only imagine that they add more later on, which we know they're going to add more because there's literally a section for more coming soon.
I did never notice that.
I'm pretty sure there is. Yeah, I'm pretty sure there is. Like, it's like next to like the free play one. There's like coming. It's like it has like a coming soon section or whatever. If I could be wrong, but I'm pretty certain.
Either I glazed past it, or you know, it's one of those things that I never, my brain doesn't even register it because why care about something that isn't there yet?
Yeah, and I can only imagine that they're going to have DLC for this that includes Mandalorian. Like, you might as well just use it as a launch pad. I mean, the graphics are good, the gameplay is good, it has good UI. Like, I can't imagine that you need to change up a whole lot about it.
If they added the levels. Mandalorian, they could probably charge $20.
Oh, easily. More. They could probably charge $30 with the new season that's going to be coming out whenever next year. I guess I think in February.
Yeah, I mean,
I could see them doing a Mandalorian release like where they have seasons 1, 2, and 3 as a new pack for $30 or $40.
But if they do 1, 2, and 3 as its own game, they can charge you $70.
Yeah, but see, just how many people are gonna like? I feel like a lot of people are gonna see through that.
Yeah, I don't know. They did make four Xbox 360 Lego Star Wars games.
I mean,
though.
You got to think. I mean, you could when you make them more affordable for 40, 30, or 40, and you just throw it out into a game that already exists. Not only do people like if people want to play it, well, it's like they can also buy the main game plus that, and then they could sell that as a pack in and of itself, and maybe for even like $100, you could get all three Mandalorian seasons plus the OG game for $100.
Yeah.
Like that's what I would do. I mean, of course, all these people care about is making money. So who knows? But rather than making good quality games,
speaking
of
money,
actually acquiescing the fan base, nobody gives a crap about us as a developer.
Speaking of money, you've segued perfectly to our final story or our final main story. Number five, Xbox price increases could be coming in 2023. So if you remember when PlayStation raised their prices, Phil Spencer and others said Xbox has no desire or I don't know, no plans to increase prices at this time. Obviously, the key point being at this time. Phil Spencer was asked recently in an interview, which I sadly don't know where the interview was with. So let me pull that up real quick. Wall Street Journal did an interview with Phil Spencer. And he said, well, let me just read the quotes here. There's two quotes. I do think at some point we'll have to raise prices on certain things, but going into this holiday, we thought it was important to maintain prices. So that's the first thing. So no price increase headed into the holidays this year. He wanted to keep things fixed. You know, inflation's going out of control. Seems like they were doing their part to gain market share by being not the one to raise prices on stuff this holiday. Second quote, we've held price on our console. We've held price on our games and our subscription. I don't think we'll be able to do that forever. I do think at some point we'll have to raise prices on certain things. He is right, though. Their games are still $60. Game Pass has never gone up in price, and their console didn't go up when their competitors did. And there is room that they could raise some things. Honestly, I think their games should go up to 70 just based on inflation and cost of making games. Like, anyone that doesn't think their games should be 70 is probably deluding themselves. And Game Pass inevitably is going to go up in price, which sucks most for Ultimate because it's 15. But, you know, if the $10 pack went up to 11 or 12, with the way inflation's been, it would be understandable. I mean, inflation does decrease the value of money in purchasing power. So, Spencer, let's get your gut reaction on price increases and how it, I guess, obviously you're from the outside looking in because you already own the console, but you also subscribe and buy games. So from your perspective, how does that value shake out?
Yeah, I was going to say, to me, he's got to be more talking about, like you were saying or hinting at, raising the cost, the base cost of their games to $70. And then the inevitable Game Pass Ultimate price hike or Game Pass hike in general that we've kind of talked about, I feel like, for like a year or more now that we're waiting for that day when that gets announced. So I mean, raising the price of the console at this point doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. I don't know what the precedent would be for that other than Sony doing it in non-North American markets.
Whereas, it's also weird because they're selling the S for like as cheap as $240 on sale.
Yeah. So I don't really know why. I just don't know why you would raise the price of the console at this point. Because the work on it is, it's not like with games where development costs are kind of always ongoing. Sure, there's updates and patches and things, but all that's more software side of things. It's not necessarily there's a hardware, you know, it's not like there's continuing rising hardware costs. I mean, I suppose like the materials that you have to buy to actually produce the boxes, maybe those prices go up. But to me, like, it just doesn't make sense that you'd raise the cost of the console itself. But games, sure, software, definitely. Game Pass, yeah. If that doesn't see a price hike in the first quarter of next year, you know, once the holiday rush and the holiday buying, you know, frenzy kind of dies down, you know, people use up their gift cards that they got for Christmas, that type of a thing. Maybe sometime before the summer, you see a price hike. And that makes sense. I mean, it's a really great value for what it is, and you see streaming services. Netflix is notorious for raising their prices fairly often.
Yeah, since they launched. Large jumps.
Yeah, and HBO Max, I think, had some of that going on too. So it's kind of the natural way of things. So
we're just lucky they haven't
priced for a long time.
Yeah, and when it launched, it was 100 games on Game Pass. They were advertising 100 plus games. Now it's like 350.
Yeah, hopefully they'll do the pro gamer move of announcing the price hike and saying in 4 weeks or in a month, and then you
or
just
your
go
grandfather
and buy
to the end of your subscription.
Well, obviously you would. I don't know why you wouldn't be for that, but I'm just saying that they'll give you like 2 weeks and you can just go buy a bunch of gift cards and lock yourself into the lower price point for the next, you know, the maximum 2 years or however long you can code it out to if you wanted to. So yeah, it's inevitable. It's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, you made me think of something with subscriptions, but I don't know. It's also PlayStation hasn't increased the cost of PlayStation Plus for the most part. They added new tiers to compete with Game Pass, but their cost has been fixed on that. I think where Xbox is really lacking is in the 60 to 70. That is where they're different than competitors. And it's reached a point where I don't know that it makes sense anymore because it's not really a differentiator. Not like, well, maybe it is a very small percentage of the audience. Maybe if you have Xbox and PlayStation, you'd buy a game because it's cheaper. But the thing is, when a game launches on multiple consoles, it always is priced the same. It's only the exclusives that are really $60 and some people that haven't raised to 70 yet. So if Sony's exclusives are 70 and your exclusives are 60, you're not competing unless people happen to own both consoles and they only can buy one game that month. So that's where I think you could go up to 70 with a little pushback versus raising the price on Game Pass has bad optics. But I think a lot of people would understand that it's necessary at some point. And then the console, I mean, your cost of producing a console generally goes down over time as things get more efficient to produce. And if inflation is offsetting that, and maybe you're still in the place you were 2 years ago because those two are canceling each other, or at least close enough, PlayStation had to increase prices and you don't, that just strengthens your market position. So I guess what I'm saying is I'd like to see the console price stay the same, games go up from 60 to 70, and then hopefully whatever Game Pass increase we get is less than, you know, $1 or $2. Here's the thing that we need to be afraid of. Is all these services now, HBO, Netflix, others, are offering cheaper ad-based tiers. Eventually, we're probably going to get some streaming service that's like, oh yeah, we'll let you, or some Xbox or PlayStation service that's going to be like, oh yeah, we'll let you have it for half the price, but every hour of gameplay, you have to watch 60 minutes of ads, but only for offline games. So any single-player game, you have to watch 60 minutes of ads, or like, maybe online games, you have to watch 30 minutes or not 30 minutes. Oh my gosh. 30 seconds, 60 seconds, not minutes. For online games, you have to watch a 30-second ad before the game launches. I think that is something that we should expect to come at some point because they want to bring these subscription services to lower income individuals. And how do you cut costs? You supplement it with ads. So honestly, I'm surprised we haven't done that already. I know it's going to get drastic pushback, but if they don't take away the existing options, like if you still have the regular Game Pass and Game Pass Ultimate, it doesn't really harm anybody to give them a $5 option with ads. But maybe it's a lot of work on Microsoft's sides to, you know, run an ad service in addition to the one they do for display ads on the Xbox itself. So, okay, with that, final thoughts. I have two quick hits. Number one, Assassin's Creed multiplayer is all but, it is confirmed. In their financial earnings statement for the quarter, Ubisoft had one sentence that laid it out. They said, additionally, a team including four Honor veterans is currently working on a bringing back multiplayer to Assassin's Creed with a standalone experience through Infinity under the project codename Invictus. So this is where Infinity, the hub inside Xbox, PlayStation, and everywhere else, is going to have the multiplayer in there, likely free to play, I'm guessing. So there's one. And then number two, Wolong Fallen Dynasty coming day one to Game Pass. We now have a release date. And like an idiot, I didn't put it in my notes. So I'm opening it up to see what that release date is right now. I linked it and I didn't fill it out. March 2023. Why don't I have a specific date? February 17th, 2023. I'm sorry. So that will be... That's the release of Wild Hearts. I'm terrible host. March 3rd, 2023. I will correct myself for the final time. March 3rd, 2023 is the release date for Wolong Fallen Dynasty, which is a Souls-like. People are looking at that to be like a Bloodborne type game, from a different studio. Obviously, it's Team Ninja. But it's exciting because it's a day one Game Pass, and it seemed to have a lot of buzz when it got announced. So those are my only two quick hits this week. I'm excited for the return of Assassin's Creed multiplayer. I will be playing that for sure. Final thoughts from you guys. Gus, Spencer, anything to add? It's late, much later than usual.
I mean, it is what it is. I'm looking forward to AC multiplayer because I played it in high school and I've said that before though. So
yeah, we talked about it more than most on the show because we're big Assassin's Creed fans.
We are an Assassin's Creed podcast on the low.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm excited to get back into some Call of Duty multiplayer tonight. So let's end it there. Thanks for listening. I'm Tim Shelton. You can follow me as always on Twitter. I am at Tim Shelton.
I am Spencer Rain. You can follow me on Twitter at Makes It Rain.
And I'm Gus Harden. And I guess if you ever disagree with any of my takes, you can always at me via Tim on Twitter at MultiformPod.
Thanks for listening. See you next week.
New episodes post every Monday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. You can contact us on Twitter at MultiformPod or by email at questions@multiformpodcast.com. If you enjoyed our show and you're feeling extra generous, please share it with your friends or on social media. You can subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or anywhere you listen.